I hear a lot of talk lately, or more so, about justice and nonviolence on a global level. And I don't often hear the issues of justice and nonviolence addressed down on a more personal or family level, although I think it's beginning to happen more and more. When I'd ask Dave to send me some of my materials up because I might talk about it, he also wrote that there had been a segment on 60 Minutes done just in the last couple weeks on battered women and family violence. And I know that in some of the magazines that have been coming out recently, there have been articles on domestic violence, so it is beginning to be talked about more often. I think often we have relegated it to a family matter or a private matter and something that should be kept in the family and not dealt with. And yet I firmly believe that domestic violence is an issue for all of us. The women who suffer from it, the policemen who are killed trying to stop it, the families, the children who suffer through separation, and those of us who stand silently by. I think of the Kitty Genovese case, who most of you probably have been familiar with and heard about. Many of the bystanders that said that they witnessed her killing and did nothing about it said that they did nothing because they thought the attacker was her husband. And that was, and it has been found that that people in general will rush to the aid of a man being beaten by another man or by a woman, or a woman being attacked by a woman, but they will not aid a woman being attacked by a man because they assume it's the husband. The January 1978 United States Civil Rights Committee hearings on battered women estimated that 1.8 million women are beaten annually by their husbands. And yet they consider this a serious underestimate.
The 60 Minutes gave the statistic of 40% of all women have been beaten at least once by their husbands.
40%.
It's also estimated often that one out of every two marriages, that domestic abuse occurs in one out of every two marriages, and that each of us in this room probably knows somebody who has been beaten by their spouse. We may not know that it's happened, but we do know people where that is going on. The statistics, however, do not reflect the number of deaths that occur. They do not reflect the women that are driven to suicide because they feel they have no other recourse. They don't reflect the children who are orphaned or separated from parents. They don't reflect the police who are killed or injured trying to intervene, or the families and friends who are injured or killed trying to intervene. And they don't reflect the physical and emotional damage that is inflicted on the children in these situations. Statistics don't account for the damage that society does to itself and its individual members when it looks away from the situation and calls it a family or a private matter. A little bit of history of wife beating. I think wife beating goes back to the, you know, very, very beginnings. I remember pictures of the cavemen dragging their wives out of the cave by the hair. It's been around for a long, long time. In the late Middle Ages, all laws agreed on the husband's right to beat their wives. By the 13th century, and I quote, it was the husband's office to be his wife's chastiser and to beat her if she contradicted or abused him or refused to obey his demands. In the rules of marriage compiled by an Italian friar in the 1400s, he urged husbands to readily beat their wives in an attitude of charity and concern for her soul. And Blackstone's commentary in the 1700s allowed a man to beat his wife if the stick he used was no bigger than his thumb. In an 18th century France, it said chastisement of wives, like that of children, was to be restricted to blows, kicks, or punches on the back, which did not leave any marks. The man who is not master of his wife is not worthy to be a man. So there was a lot of history where this was, you know, considered right, proper thing to do. And it's been only 100 years since men, since laws, or since men were denied the legal right to beat their wives in both the United States and Britain. And although the laws say that it's no longer legal, behavior continues. And I think culturally and normative prescriptions still support the behavior. I think all of us have seen the cocktail napkins in a bar, or jokes in magazines, heard party jokes. Even Mother Goose doesn't escape. There is a Mother Goose rhyme that goes, "Little Dickie Dilver had a wife of silver. He took a stick and broke her back and sold her to the miller. The miller didn't want her, so he threw her in the river." These are kind of things that we read to our kids. That doesn't happen to be one that I knew, but I also think even the old woman in the shoe in dealing with child abuse or punishing children, she whipped them all soundly and sent them to bed. The only reason given was that she didn't know what to do with all of them. There's a plaque in an Indiana motel, and I have seen it other places, that says a woman, a dog, and a walnut tree, the more you beat them, the better they be. These kind of things, you know, I think the words are important. We say them, we laugh about them, we joke about them, and don't consider it serious. And some of the statistics that we've already talked about. Wife beating is the nation's most common yet least reported crime. It's more common than rape. And Mary was saying 40%. 1.8 million women that are beaten annually by their husbands. And a fifth of the American adults, according to a Harris poll, approve of slapping their spouse, or slapping a spouse on appropriate, undefined occasions. And the highest approval comes from college graduates. I find that kind of surprising. And it seems that all segments of the population are involved. It doesn't happen only among lower income families or minority groups. It's in all income groups. In fact, one study was done where police in white middle class Norwalk, Connecticut received roughly the same number of wife abuse calls as police in a Harlem precinct of the same size. So it covers all areas, all economic groups. In fact, many statistics say that doctors, lawyers, executives, and also clergy are among the highest abusers.
What do they classify abuse as, and what is severe abuse? How do they have any kind of classifications, or could you tell us, like, an example of what abuse would be? Would it be slapping your wife, or would it, you know, would it be punching her out, or throwing her against the wall, or what are some of the common things that I wouldn't think my doctor would do, or my lawyer, or my pastor might be doing to his wife?
I haven't ever, you know, seen that. I haven't done great amounts of reading. I haven't seen that listed out, what they would call abuse. I think some of them are just, yes, the Harris poll just talked about slapping. And imagine, you know, I'm not sure if that's ever been defined.
I know family violence can be considered just pushing your spouse up against the wall. Any form of anger that involves physical contact, you cannot even physically hit the person, throwing the keys against the car windshield, or the windshield shattering on the person inside the car. I mean, you aren't actually doing it, but it's an act of violence.
Thank you. 60 Minutes showed a couple of physician's wife. They lived in a very well-to-do suburb. Showed her in the hospital, and it honestly looked like she had been shot up in the war. I mean, her face had been so kicked in, her nose and was all broken and off to one side, and her jaw was. And this had happened to her. She thought if it just happened once, it would never happen again, and it had happened two or three times until she finally sought help. And these were all Caucasians. Another woman said, "My husband has to beat me around every night before he goes to bed. throws her around the bedroom or can't go to sleep. I mean, that was just kind of the accepted thing, that she knew she was going to get knocked around on the floor so he could sleep.
And I think that, you know, it does become almost an accepted pattern, even for some of the women. I've had women, I work at a shelter for women who are victims of abuse. And many of them said, you know, I couldn't take it anymore and I had to get out, but he really had a right to do it because it was the only way he could keep me in line. So that even women themselves feel that the husbands have a right to beat them. And I think there's something wrong with the society that, you know, allows it, condones it, and doesn't deal with it, but says that it's a private problem. I mean, some of the myths, and I appreciate if you, you know, if you have questions, just ask them. And
I have one question. What, I don't want to just say it like this, but what's wrong with these women who think that it's okay? Do they have low self-esteems? Or
usually they come out of homes where this was just the accepted thing, and you know, if mother took it, then I take it.
Now, often, I think self-esteem is a big thing, but I think also it is people that have been brought up, and I think that's part of the emotional damage of the children. As children are brought up seeing their fathers beat their mothers, the girls figure that's how married life is, the boys figure that's how married life is, and it continues, because most of these women come out of situations where their parents were beaten, where their mother was beaten.
So it's like it's actual social training almost.
Right. And that, you know, some of the things that they're talking about doing and trying to do now is even education classes, whether it's home ec classes or whatever, for both boys and girls in junior high and high school to help educate them in proper behavior in marriage, you know, that abuse isn't the norm, isn't, you know, to be condoned, isn't the way to handle things. So some of it is educating. I think that's, you know, one of the things that makes it one of our major social problems, one of the myths that it is that it isn't much of a problem, but with the ramifications and the violence that begins in the home, I think it's one of the major social problems. At our shelter, too, I saw women of all ages, economic class, races, religions, educational background. A couple of the women that I worked with were PhDs. One was a college professor. We had a lot of nurses for some reason that would come in. Very well-educated women, some of them coming from families with a lot of money. And I think one of the things that I was surprised at in the shelter is that many of them do come in with no evidence of being physically abused. I think I expected that I would see all of these women just in this terrible shape, so beat up and battered. One of the comments I wrote back in, or read back in the history part about beating them in places that it doesn't show, that happens a lot. And men have learned now, especially as laws are being enforced a little tighter and police are sometimes responding, they learn how to beat in ways that do not show so that it can't be proven.
How did you deal with emotional battery?
We could not take people that were only emotionally abused. We were sheltered for physically abused. We would get crisis calls and referred them on to other agencies and places that could help them. But we didn't, other than in terms of people who were physically and emotionally abused, did not deal with that. And there's a lot more of that that goes on.
This is in another vein, but is there very much physical abuse of, let's say, older couples by wives on their husband's spouses at all? Do you know anything about that? Or is it
wives
more common among the elderly?
I haven't seen any statistics on that. I know that it happens. We had women in their 60s that came into the shelter. Not very many of them. But I know it happens. And one thing I also wanted to mention, domestic abuse does occur between, you know, wives, sometimes abuse their husbands. It happens much less often, and much less damage inflicted, partly because of the size and strength. There's also the abuse towards children, and there's a lot of parent abuse, which is now becoming more recognized, and realize that that goes on. And that, I was thinking of that in terms of the elderly. Elderly parents living with their sons and daughters who then abuse. Some of the myths that surround it are that women that are beaten over a period of time evidence severe psychological problems equal to the husband's. And this is found to be not true. And it's, in a sense, a way of blaming the victim, which we so often do in so many situations. I've heard it said and read that a woman is masochistic, enjoys being beaten, so that, you know, she's as much to blame because she enjoys it. And that may be true in some cases, but some women consider rough treatment as evidence of love, but it's not true in the majority of cases. We had a couple staff members at our shelter who had been abused and who had gotten out of the situations, and talking to them, you know, they certainly were not emotionally disturbed. They were very, you know, intelligent women. One of them had gotten out almost immediately when the abuse started. The other one had stayed with the situation for lack of anywhere to go. He had stayed with it for quite some time. Also, women who come into the shelter, some of them left immediately on being abused and then ended up going back to their husbands, because after their 2 weeks that they were allotted in the shelter, they still had no place to go. And going back home was the only place they could go. Another myth is that women provoke the husbands to beat them. But it's found that women are often attacked when they're asleep, or they're attacked when they come home from grocery shopping, or when they're doing house cleaning. They're often attacked at times when they have done nothing to provoke.
They can maybe seem to be related to a theory about rape, is that somehow women entice the rapist,
mm-hmm.
and that it's the woman's fault, or that's what is contended a lot of times.
It's so much easier to blame the victim. And, many times they will be attacked if the dinner isn't on. In fact, there's a definition of wife. A wife beater is a man who insists you had it coming because the dinner was late. He judges marriage as a license to hurt. He claims he owns his wife and soothes the pain of frustration with his fists and shares the shame with 20 million American men. There was one case study I read of a woman who had been beaten very, very severely by her husband because dinner wasn't ready when he came home, but he came home 4 days later than he had said he was coming. And so that kind of really non-provocation. Also, one of the myths is that during pregnancy, husbands treat their wives with tenderness and love. It's found out that this is often when men are the most violent. During pregnancy and also during illness, that men will be more violent than they will, than they are when the woman is healthy and stronger.
How much of it is related to drugs and drinking?
I don't know percentages on that. A very high percentage to alcohol. And there's some interesting ways of looking at that. There are some theories that so often it's been an excuse that I got drunk and I beat my wife, I wouldn't have done it if I was sober. They're saying that some men will get drunk to beat their wife, which is putting it a little different. They want to do it, they won't, you know, so they will get drunk in order to beat her rather than it just happening. Another myth is that in the majority of cases, there are indicators before marriage which forewarn of husband's violent behavior. And that is not true either. very seldom is there any indication before marriage that the husband is going to be an abuser. I would guess that one of the only indicators that may be there is if he had come out of a family that was where there was abuse, and if you knew that. And that doesn't really prove anything except that it would be some kind of a warning. And also a myth is that the assailant is insane or possesses some defect or abnormality. And this also is not true. Most of these men get along very well in the rest of the world. They appear normal in all the other aspects of their lives. They are not loners and they're not friendless people. Many of these men can be out of parties, are real, you know, well-liked, are the life of the party. Everybody sees them as really good people. It's one of the problems for women who oftentimes find that even their own parents will not believe that they are being abused. And I talked to many women who said that even their own mothers would say, why are you trying to make trouble for your husband? He would never do a thing like that. Why are you accusing him of such a thing? So that added burden is on the woman, that they are lying, that they're not being honest. I have a friend, Karen, who was a victim of abuse. I just have recently met her, and it got so bad, she was afraid the next time she would be killed. And this is about maybe close to 20 years ago when she was first married. She left 3 small preschool children with her mother-in-law and ran, and had not seen her children again until about 3-4 years ago. She has since remarried and been married in a very happy marriage for the last 10 or 12 years. She got out. She ran, but she had to lose all contact with her children, and until 3 years ago had not seen them again. Her mother and father do not believe that her husband beat her. And her youngest child, it's really kind of sad, her youngest child has cancer now, and her mother says it's because she left the kids and that God is getting back at her. And with no understanding of what she'd gone through. I also have, you know, when I thought of the statistics that each of us knows people who have been abused, and I thought that just sounds, you know, just isn't possible that everybody knows somebody. But I know personally 3 that have no connection with the shelter, just people that I have met in other areas. One of them is a woman in our church who is very active and involved in many levels of the church, who ended up at one point shooting her husband in the stomach and almost killing him in self-defense. And she said at that point realized that she could no longer live in that situation that would bring her to do that violence to another person. Kicked him out of the house. I'm not sure how to say that. He was not supposed to be living there, and he was breaking in, and she was frightened. She went into hiding on the other side of town, and I found a lawyer for her and would go and pick her up at this other place because she was that frightened. And she is now almost finished with a degree in gerontology, is raising her 3 children, doing an excellent job, very involved in church, and a lot of really good things happening, but it was a pretty rough, awful life for her for a while.
Susan, something else that 60 Minutes brought out was that so often when the police are called, that's kind of the last place where they will go is into somebody's home. I mean, the announcer keeps saying a man's home is his castle, and they showed time and again going with the police to answer calls for wife abuse. The door was just slammed, and the husband said, get out of here, you don't have any right to be here, and they really didn't, I guess. I don't understand the law.
Yeah. In Jane's case, her husband was not living at the house anymore, and he was trying to break in, and it was in the middle of the night, and she had the doors blocked and locked and called the police to come and get him away. And when they found out it was his house, you know, they came up the door and talked to her. They let him in the house and then told her there was nothing they could do about it and left. And that was at the point where, you know, she ended up shooting him shortly after that. You know, she was at least keeping him out. When the police came, they were the ones that ended up letting him in. And the laws are funny that way. Also in Detroit, most major cities, I guess all major cities have a screening system for police calls as to which are most important. In Detroit, wife abuse is 43 on the screening list. So unless the police are having a really slow night, you can't expect much action. And if they do come, you know, sometimes it's letting them in or going away and saying there's nothing we can do. Getting past the police situation, if you do get them picked up and arrested, they sometimes will hold them for 6 to 12 hours and then release them again. Often, if the wife tries to prosecute, the prosecutors demand quite a large sum of money in order to make sure that she follows through with it. Many of these women don't have the money to even pay to start prosecution. The judges often will then, even if it is prosecuted, will let them go because it's a private matter and shouldn't even be heard. So there's just a whole lot of things through the courts that go against the women, where domestic abuse is abuse and yet it's treated so differently from any other kind of abuse if it's done by another person outside the family. I think some of the things, and often I'm asked the question, hasn't been asked tonight yet, why does a woman stay? And I feel that often that's the wrong question to ask anyway. It's, you know, why does the husband beat her needs to be asked. Why does this happen? Why does he get away with it? And many men continue beating because, you know, nothing happens when they do it, so that they continue doing it. And then, you know, what does keep her there? And with the women that I've talked to, the women that come to the shelter, the thing that keeps them in the home often is economics. They have no money to go out and get their own home. They probably do not have job skills. Some of them do, but many of them do not have job skills. They have children. There's a problem with getting child care while they go out to work. And found often, at least in Detroit, and I'm sure it's true other places, that even if they could get on welfare and get some kind of public assistance, the housing often will rent to welfare mothers if they don't have children, or they'll rent to mothers that aren't on welfare, mothers with children if they aren't on welfare. But mothers on welfare with children, they won't rent to. So it's very difficult for them to get housing. And often women, too, have been socialized to be passive and dependent, and to believe that there's nothing they can do but to endure it. And often they are told that, even when they go to parents, even if the parents believe them or the friends believe them, they'll say, well, you know, just hang in there and things will get better. If you don't do anything to aggravate the situation, it'll get better. And one thing that I think that's happening now is women are finding out also that they have sacrificed and they've endured and they've hung in there for the sake of love or for their children's sake, and now they find out that they're blamed for not getting out earlier. Everybody's saying, why'd they hang in there? What was wrong with them that they stayed? So they're kind of caught coming and going. They did what they thought was right, and now people are blaming them for not having left. And another thing is there are not enough shelters, and shelters are often full. This summer, at quite a bit of the summer, we were running with 25 to 30 women, 60 to 70 kids. And we had the 10th floor of a hotel. And women that come in with however many, 3, 4, 5, up to 7 children we had, were in one hotel room, a woman and 7 kids. And just one floor of a hotel with that many people gets to be a little horrendous.
Who had the shelter? Funded by what, United Givers?
It was funded originally by the state, and then in September, the state cut the funding in half, and HUD picked up the other half through the city of Detroit, and then there's some private donations. At the point, in September, at one point, we had to close down. We ended up being able to open because the HUD funding came through. We were able to open up just a day later, but all staff went on volunteer for 8 weeks until the funding was actual. Another thing, kind of jumping around, it's very difficult sometimes for the women, if they do choose to leave, to get away from their spouses. A lot of the husbands will follow them, will hunt them down. We had a woman shortly before Christmas with 7 children that came from Appalachia. She had been beaten most of her married life. She had 7 children under 12. And said that kind of the last straw had come for her when she discovered that her 12-year-old son was sleeping with a knife under his pillow, because he said, next time my daddy touches my mama, I'm going to kill him. And that really frightened her, that her 12-year-old would think of killing his father. And about the same time, she saw on television there was a crisis number for a women's center, and she didn't know if that would do anything for her, but she thought she'd call them and find out. They were able to get money to put her and the children up in a motel until she could get her car drivable to come to Detroit, where she had a brother. And she was at her brother's for 2 weeks when her husband found it and beat her there and threatened her brother and his family. So she ended up in our shelter. And it was quite an experience for all of us. That family was something to handle. The violence that you could begin to see, basically the kids were beautiful kids and they were a lot of fun and really nice, but if they got angry, they had very short fuses. And the 12-year-old, I got in the middle of one of his fights once trying to hold him off from really beating another kid. You know, I had a coffee cup in one hand and wasn't doing very well until another social worker came and, you know, locked him against the wall. But you could just see the violence repeating itself. And she eventually then left and went to Maine to a sister that was there, hoping that she could get away. But some of these women have got to do a lot of running, and they are followed.
I'm sure that some of the cases, probably the majority of them, the man is probably at fault, shall we say. But I can't quite help but believe that some of the women must be provoking something somewhere along the line. I can't believe that it's the man all the time.
And I think that's very true. I guess, you know, the response I have to that is, no matter how much you provoke, I guess I believe physical violence is wrong, no matter how much you're provoked. I think one of the things that is true is that women, for whatever reason, sometimes are often seen to have stronger verbal skills, and I think that is often true. And verbally can do a lot of abuse to a husband who may not be very secure, thus really provoking the attack. I think it's true that and you know that no doubt happens. And but I guess I just have a hard time, you know, seeing that this, that the physical abuse is warranted in any circumstances.
I know an instance of a couple or a young girl, she was 23 when I got to know her, and by that time she had been living with this man for 4 years. They had a child, and then when little Adam was 2 years old, he was wondering why mommy and daddy had different names. And so they decided to get married. And so that they had been living 6 years together when they got married. And as soon as they got married, he became a wife beater. And just because, well, he was married now, he couldn't beat her. And it was just a real eye, because they had had 6 good years together. And then just with marriage, he became impossible.
And some people feel that part of that is the whole mindset that said that the wife is property. And is treated like property rather than, you know, humanly, humanely.
The thing that you mentioned, sir, about when you talked about this woman from Appalachia who ends up in Detroit at a shelter, you know, I think a really big problem is that there's no place for women. Mm-hmm. And it's even hard in lots of small towns or even bigger towns to find an organization or someone who will put a family up in a motel for even a night, you know, without being suspicious. The town that we lived in last year, I was really impressed with what a group of concerned women had gotten together and done, and it wasn't really that, it took a long time to do it, but they didn't have the money to have a shelter or any of those kinds of things. They had a selection process for determining what they called safe homes. And this was people who were willing to open up their house, their apartment, wherever they lived, to an abused wife and the family. There were two last year in the town that we lived in, two families or two couples, or I don't know how it was. But for them, it meant being called at 4:30 in the afternoon and at 5 o'clock having three people in your home for not, you know, not knowing how long. You know, having most of the time the husband was still in the same town, so it was a very high security problem that, you know, that if she had a car that he could find her just by, you know, being a town of only 18,000, he could drive around the whole thing, you know, find him. But nonetheless, I was really impressed with that ministry. Mm-hmm. And that act of giving yourself, because it was a very hard job.
And it is a risky job, in especially in a town that size, but even in the city, men are very resourceful in finding. There are several shelters in Detroit, and all of us, when we handle crisis phone, never gave out the information on anybody that was there. If somebody called and asked for one of the women, our standard reply was always, we can't give any information out on residents. And all shelters had that same thing. But there were men that would find the shelter and would even get up to the 10th floor. We had from the elevator area was locked off, and there was a buzzer system that let people in and out. It was very high security. And there were men that would get up there and be, you know, banging and trying to break through. The hotel security was very cooperative, and so was our emergency police number, would be there within 5 minutes also. So they did work well with our shelter. But it got a little scary at times, and especially if you're working night duty alone. And also when you're taking these women just on basis of a phone call, you don't always know who you're getting and what the situation is. Two of the women that had been in our shelter were eventually killed by their husbands. One of them had gone back to her husband, and he started to beat her again, and then acted very remorseful and told her that he would bring her to the shelter, and that he just couldn't help himself and he didn't want to hurt her, and he was really sorry. And he brought her in, and they got her things in the hotel, and just as she was, you know, he was going to go back out the door again, he grabbed her by the arm and pulled her out the door and into the elevator and shot her down in the parking lot. And another one had been in the shelter just a week before I started working, and had gone to stay with somebody else, a sister or somebody, and her husband was hiding out in the garage and killed her when she came out of the house. There's a lot of really awful violence that does, you know, go on within these families. I think one of the hardest things, I worked 3 weekends of night duty from 10 at night to 8 in the morning. And you don't, at least we didn't get a lot of calls at night. But the night of the full moon, and I used to laugh about that, and I don't laugh anymore, the night of the full moon was just horrendous. And I had women on hold, and I've heard people joke about calling suicide prevention and being put on hold, and that's what I felt like. I had two women that were just in hysterics, and which one do you put on hold? one was safe and one was still in the house with her husband, and I had to deal with her for about 45 minutes while the other woman sat and waited.
What did they do to the husband that killed his wife?
What did they do to him? I'm not sure what they did. I don't remember what they did with the one. I think the one pleaded insanity. In fact, I don't think the one case has been heard yet.
How come the law differs so on assault and battery between domestic and, I mean, if you beat up your neighbor or do something like that, you'd be in jail and fined. And how come it isn't the same when it's, is that, if it's related or if it's family, it doesn't apply?
One of the things, often, if it's done without a weapon, now I get in problems legally. If it's done without a weapon, it's not a felony. It's a misdemeanor. And in a misdemeanor, they cannot be arrested unless the arresting officer saw the abuse occur.
Also, on assault and battery, it's pretty hard to have something done because my brother and I were getting beat up one time and my father came out and saw the guy. The police came and everything and it could not be proven. And my brother and I could not testify this morning.
Yeah.
I work with a woman in a was in my child care center. The man that she had her four children by was not her husband. Broke into her house through the basement window and tried to kill her with a knife. And the police, one of the kids called the police. And he was charged with simple assault and breaking and entering. And the police asked her if she had encouraged him to come in. She said, if I had encouraged him, I would have opened the front door. She was at one shelter, and he showed up around the shelter, and they would not keep her. They would not let her stay there anymore. They had her transferred to a shelter in another state. They were hoping that he would cross state lines and then they'd be able to nail him.
I'm not sure it's important to separate, but I've got so many things that I want to at least try to separate. It seems to me there's a difference from beat your wife and your dog and the black oak tree or black walnut tree or whatever it is, a mindset of treatment of husband to wife from much of what you've also said. I mean, at one point I'd say psychological problem, that you simply can't relate to previous male domination, and but maybe you can't separate those out, or
alcohol related, or in Appalachia, some of the people we were called once to take, the woman couldn't get away without some car, a neighbor, we didn't know them well, and I didn't know what we were walking into, but we went down, she swore out a warrant or something, and he had been drinking. But he also gets belligerent with male neighbors, dogs and sheep. I mean, when, do you get my question? Are there some, okay. I think at some point, it's violence and psychological problem. At another point, it's a kind of tradition that we still haven't broken of husband to wife, or, but when they're all together, I have difficulty understanding the phenomena of battered women. Maybe that's the way to say it. And I guess yeah. It's just all pieces of it, huh?
I have, from my experience, and it was only, 6 months that I was working in the shelter before I came here, I think there are all of those. Some of the men that abuse are abusing neighbors and anybody else that happens to get in their way. Others of them are very reputable doctors, lawyers, whatever, who abuse no one else.
Mm-hmm.
And often abuse will never occur if there's anybody else present before me in the privacy, and most often in the bedroom. So I think there's elements of all of, all of that. But do it when there's drugs or alcohol, and that's a high percentage.
But even the women who came to the shelter, you had that same mix.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, some of the women were really a mess when they came. They're not, physically messed up psychologically. Some of them we have to turn away. our rules are really quite strict. The shelter is very strictly run. The women have to do all of the work in the shelter, including the childcare, the meals, the cleaning, everything they give themselves. It wasn't a hotel for them. They could not leave the shelter unless they hired some other woman there to take care of their children or made some other woman responsible. Childcare was only to use if they were present and the kids got bad and descended back to the mother. So, and they were not allowed to use any alcohol as beverages. There was one room for smoking and two smoking for themselves. And we were to, you know, if a woman called and we talked to her on the phone and told us she could come in, if she had been drinking and we could smell that when she came, we were not to admit her. Unless there was some danger to us if we were on a lonely piece of listening. But the procedure then was to admit her and let her go until there were no staff. But many of the women, you know, were really sharp. And I think the thing that impressed me, so many people would ask me, wasn't it an awfully depressing place to work? And I found that so many of the women were kind of seeing this as a step in a new direction. They had finally made the step out. And the strength that was there for them, the resourcefulness, their, you know, looking and making decisions job-wise, school-wise, whatever. And we did have counseling, vocational counseling, educational counseling, housing, health, a whole variety of things for them to help them get started.
How about legal services? Some of the women couldn't afford it.
Right. We, our center itself didn't have them, but we had resources that we could refer them to that were very helpful. The Women's Justice Center, we started to get a lot of support for the women.
Did something set up for the men to counsel
them or for the children? In our shelter, because of the high security time, we did not counsel the men that. There were services that we would refer them to, and if the women wanted counseling with their husbands, there was one agency that used particularly where they went to that agency outside of the shelter and would meet with their husband and a social worker for counseling. We did not, you know, deal with the men at all in that
shelter.
I wasn't really there long enough. I can think of one that seemed like it was working out and then she ended up back in the shelter.
Most of the women who come to finally leave home never go back. It doesn't get resolved other than taking up marriage or leaving town. Is it just that bad to do that one left? Is that the norm?
I think, from what I see, I think, you know, seldom does it work out, seldom is it resolved. That does not mean that the women don't go back. I think most often the women went back to the home because they had the 2 weeks was up and there was no place left to go and they had no money. And they would go home. So it's a real risk for women to leave in the first place because they're going to get twice as bad if they end up having to call back. And that's really hard on them. Some of them were able to get, you know, get the husband out of the home and then they could go back to the home with the husband gone. But I don't really know of any, in my experience, that were able to resolve it and go back.
What do you mean to put the kids out of the home? And the people that do not leave the house and they've got to have more friends and to be safe?
The battered wife more friends. I have a feeling there is. It's another thing I haven't seen statistics on. It was something that we would evidence occasionally in the shelter. Many of the women that we saw in the shelter were excellent parents, really good mothers. We had some that we had to really watch, and a couple that we reported to protective services and had their children, you know, had asked if the children be removed from their custody after they left. Because they were abused and we were seeing that abuse. And in the inner city, it, to me, it's so obvious why it's wrong, but I can understand it more in a city situation where people are powerless and frustrated. The kids kick the dogs and cats, and the mothers beat the kids, and the husbands beat the wives, and it's such a frustrating existence because they don't have adequate housing and food and jobs, and they live in cramped quarters and too many people and too much noise. But professional people, I find that really hard when college educated people and doctors, lawyers, surgeons or abuse people. That must be more drugs and alcohol than just.
Yeah, at that I have a hard time understanding this too, because some of the statistics, you know, show that most often abuse occurs where the husband's occupational level, not necessarily economic status, but the occupational level is lower than that of the neighbors. And I could think for doctors and lawyers, they're going to be up there. Or if the wife has more education than the husband, and also tends to be a high abuse situation. You know, it's really, from everything that I have read and experienced, really comes out of a very low self-esteem of a man having to choose his man. That one quote, which was way back in history, but you know, a man who is not the master of his life is not worthy to be a man. No control and the property. That I have read and heard that makes more sense to me is that women who will stand up, you know, firmly at the very beginning and show that they won't tolerate it, not that they're going, you know, not that they necessarily have to leave, but will in some way indicate that, you know, I am not to be beaten, you're not going to do that to me, and are very firm and strong, are not as likely to be beaten. That the women that, the phenomenon, it really happens. There are women that are really powerless, that will sort of cower in the corner and take it and go quietly on, hoping that it will go away. And if a woman can be strong and maybe walk out of the house, if it, you know, you're not going to do that to me, I'm leaving, and leave for a while, it's less likely to occur. I think there are different opinions on that. Different opinions, and the whole idea of lack of responsibility anymore, that being able to excuse it by saying, you know, with the disease, I can't help it. The same thing, or I was drunk, I couldn't help it. But so often we try to pass off and excuse our behavior and say we weren't responsible for it. So I think there are differing opinions of whether it's a disease that can't be helped. Some would say that it is, and others say we can control that. It seems to me that if society could, you know, come down stronger, letting people know that it isn't right, maybe employers, family members, whatever, really get the message across strongly that's not acceptable behavior, instead of taking the husband's side and so on. And how can you say, oh, your husband didn't do that, and, you know, much to you to say that they didn't like that. Blaming the victim, that even some of that would deter some of the beating if they knew that they would be put down on. But I understand that, you know, in some circles, there's something that men have joke about it, the neighborhood bar, and talk about it, you know, and it's affecting them.
About the possibilities of, let's say, a divorce situation, where they're not quite safe to a divorce, but the woman, let's say, that has the upper hand on a man when it comes to a divorce, and they kind of hold that divorce up to the guy's head and say, well, hey, he's pushing. What does the man have to fight with, I wonder? Maybe this could be a cause of some of the, in the upper classes.
I don't know how women have the upper hand in the divorce, because I don't,
Not very often.
Alimony is so seldom awarded in divorce cases, and when it is, it is seldom paid.
Well, I'm not even saying alimony. I'm saying we're going to split, and some of these people have a sizable chunk together, and they split up, and maybe the guy doesn't want to get a divorce, and he's holding it up against him, and he's on and on and on and on and goes, and finally he just explodes. And, I'm having a problem sitting here thinking that it's always the man's fault, and in some cases, man, I'm sure it probably is. Not all the time.
I guess, you know, my own response again is, you know, what I said earlier, you know, yes, the woman is a part of that, you know, she's a part of that relationship, whatever happens, she, you know, she may have done some things to instigate it, whatever. But I still, you know, find that for me, there's no excuse for physical violence.
But then again, what about the woman that laid into her husband? We never hear about that. She can fling a dick at him, and that's all right.
I said that earlier, that does happen, but it happens in very, you know, a much lower percentage of cases. In some cases, in here, I have the, you know, percentages from somebody. Women do abuse their husbands. The percentage of that happening is very much lower, and the amount of physical injury is much, much less.
Because it's really lower, or men are using the physical?
And how do you consider psychological?
Yeah.
Psychological damage is that opportunity for you to discuss what about the wife is good. How can you not get a better job? I don't get a human thing until I'm standing on the block. How can you get a copy of that? How can you know the people send you up in there? How can you know? And it's got to be important for any help.
Yeah. We had a neighbor, and he was a doctor, and he was married. He was married in 6 years. Probably not enough, but he learned as a child to have a sensation to violence. And someone can know that he was a children. And he was very psychologically abused with Dr. Roller. And just recently now he puts her up in other places with bruises. And it's something that, you know, it's a very tragic situation. And I've seen that in a way. They're both, she expresses herself, she's learned the wrong expression, and
she has been such a, literally a headache. Well, I just really believe that women do have the power, the psychological, to destroy their husbands, and not that that warrants physical abuse, or that that abuses it on the part of the husband, but I do think it should always worry through the woman for the abuse of the
child. Yeah, and I agree with that. I think that it happens. I think the psychological abuse can also go from husband to wife. In many cases, I still don't think that we want physical abuse. And I think that, maybe a reason why it happens is
definition of violence is non-creative communication, and that non-violence is the lack of violence is when there is creative communication going on. People that don't learn how to, well, like there's a book in the bookstore, Intimate Enemy, How to Fight with Your Spouse, things like that. So we haven't learned to express our anger and frustration. If it's not creative communication, it becomes violent. Mm-hmm. Whether it's psychological or physical or whatever it is.
Thinking though is that most often women are abused when they have been doing nothing. I mean, they are abused when they're home sleeping by a husband who's maybe stayed out for 4 or 5 days and suddenly come in at 3 or 4 in the morning and beats on them. They have said nothing, they've done nothing, they've gone to sleep. Or they're fixing dinner, or they're cleaning the house and he walks in and beats. Most often abuse occurs when they have been doing nothing. Maybe a period of time.
Is it something when they've been doing nothing lately because, I don't know, that it's been building up and building up and building up, and they probably get the exact what you've been doing, or maybe when you said the wife is doing nothing after a lot of sleep, and maybe that doing nothing is about the communication, which I can understand, but we have no more relationship in terms of coming on to these different things.
I have a hard time with my husband with him 4 in the morning, so I have to communicate with him. But I think, we can look at a lot of reasons, and I'm sure there are as many reasons as there are people doing it. It still is a violent act of one human being against another. And the contrast, the injustice, the violence is there. And I think can't be excused and talked with. I mean, there are a lot of things that can be done, whether it's counseling, legally, educationally. There are steps that need to be taken. It needs to be talked about a lot more and opened up.
And
the connection
between the women that are the people who use violence and struggling in international conflict, and the violence of the lifestyle, not just the world, not just the stable violence between people, it's just the use of the word, somebody was yelling at the girl, I'm going to kill you, things like that. And the thing, I remember her being very angry
when we would use all kinds of language about another person. And just the whole cultural influence of, I think, means pro football, whatever, contact sports, and even sports that are supposedly not contact, can be very violent and very brutal, and you get desensitized to that. Media desensitizes us to violence all the time. We can read about it and see it on television and films. And I know that I often experience a shock when I leave the village and I watch TV or something, but I'm walking down the street and I see one mentioned and heard the husband and wife screaming each other at a stoplight. And I wasn't used to hearing anything else that kind of verbal or just overt kind of violence. So to have the phenomena of people treating each other physically violently, then there's so many violent factors about this that we live all the time. I mean, not that well, right? Not for that to do. But I guess I see there's a company correlation.
I heard in the radio tonight that there's an organization that charts the correlation between certain television program violence and then correspondent violence that happens in the city that evening. And so they're charting what ABC and CBS and NBC have on and what happens in town that same night, and during an hour or two thereafter, and then making the city. The chart just follows right along. Even to the point, this thing, maybe it's newsweek in time, but even to the point where there's one network that's being sued by the victim of the family of a victim who was killed exactly like it was portrayed on the ABC late night movie or something.
And just
to imitate
the
quality. Yeah, that's
the imitation. And even it's said that quality can be so dangerous.
It's disturbing to me that it seems like they don't get resolved. I mean, I think that's why I was trying to search for some sort of explanation. That the fact that these women, you know, either leave with the problem unsolved, or they go back with the problem unsolved. And if they leave with the problem unsolved, then, I mean, it's between the two of them, there was something wrong there. I mean, whether it was her fault entirely or his fault entirely or a combination of the two. And they're both walking away from it. It's just asking for another situation. And I guess that's what, you know, if it's her fault, she's not going to walk into another relationship and maybe begin a similar thing. If it's his fault and nothing is resolved, you know, he's capable of being in the same situation as another one. That's what the scripture is about the way.
I think to me that's what's so important about having shelters and having shelters and then other places where women can go, where they can get the counseling, where there's a variety of, you know, the vocational, all that kind of counseling is there, but also there is referral to family crisis centers where they and the husband can meet for counseling, for the whole family can meet for counseling. So that in some of these cases there are attempts at resolving. There aren't nearly enough places, and the caseload is so large that, you know, they can't take care of everybody. But I think that's, you know, something that needs to be done. Counseling that can help to resolve the issues, working with the children also to kind of stop that whole cycle that just keeps continuing.
I just think understand that system, but I heard recently that, or read recently that marriages that are in trouble, the couples spend only 20% of their waking hours together, and that kind of plan that they don't really spend much time together at all. And also, it's a trivia question, but I think it has to do with communication. How many minutes a week do you think the average couple spends talking to one another a week? How many minutes a week?
20.
That's pretty close. Mm-hmm. 17 minutes a week is the average. I mean, what does that no wonder wives get beat up. I mean, they don't, they just never talk to one another.
No, I just,
no,
then what's the appetite? Next time they announce it, we were going to read that, they're going to just beat down the door to get in there. That was a part of the situation that the show was in. And
the wife never promoted so much as Joyce did.
No, and the whole thing was very complex, and it went downhill until finally it was wrong.
One of the things that I have started here to kind of fit in is that one of the things that must happen is when we must begin to address the attitudinal biases against the victims of domestic assault, the legacy of the common law right of staff judgment, the belief that a man's home is his castle, and the myth that women could lift men into solving them. It's kind of one of the things that we need to address when we look at those. I'm even talking about a lot of that right now. It's kind of a blame the victim.
Well, the question, once they came to the center, was that basically the only thing they could do then was split. Seems to me, once you come to the center, that says that it's a crisis. It says that it's gone so far that all of the liabilities for that running, which you have already stated about going back 2 weeks and you're going to be out of there and all, that there are more possibilities for the thing to be resolved when there are more factors to tend toward healing. In other words, I think when I've got a couple successes, at least I think it's now 10 years later and things are fine in the family, where I used to meet her at the emergency room at DC Hospital and she'd been beat up again. But there were some factors. They were in a Christian congregation where the male image that the husband had was not beat up your wife. The family was together with a support base of people who knew them both. I think there were some possibilities for working on it. I think once they came to you, and the husband did not come to you, there's not a lot going towards kind of family healing that could be the case if other forms of intervention were possible. In other words, you were there at a point when some other kinds of, can you call somebody in, is a better chance of healing than moving wife and all the kids out for 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that's right. And, you know, you had that Christian community that was lending a very different, you know, way it's supposed to be. These people go back to home and family with the accepted sin again. We get them at a crisis where it's pretty far along. I did handle a couple of times, and I'm sure it happened more with the other people. I wasn't on crisis phone a lot, but I did get two calls that I remember, one from a boyfriend and one from a husband, who said that they were abusive to the girlfriend's wife and was there a place that they could go for help so we can give them counsel. And referred them to crisis. I mean, so there are some men that are recognizing the problem, don't want to be in that situation, want to help, and they call and say, you know, where can I go? And they will call the women's center because it's the only place they want to talk. Yeah, you know, we certainly
certain. So, kind of the question that we ask first, as they're thinking about it, and coming back to, you know, that you can't believe that it's man's fault all the time. That's kind of what you're saying. I don't, if you take a marriage or a divorce, there's not one person's fault that's causing it.
Really?
Not,
I firmly believe that it can't be. There may be something in the wife that the husband can't stand, and that causes him to do this. And it could be something from sleeping with another man to not having dinner on the table.
There's probably some underlying psychological thing.
There's some kind of problem there, in a different kind of way. I don't know what this is. I don't even really know anything. I'm just talking. But I would guess that the intention of a normal man beating a normal wife, they've never had a problem, has always been able to communicate, is very slim. You know, there's got to be some kind of a problem there. It might not be recognizable, you know, but I don't think that we can say that men just beat women and that women do nothing, you know. Am I speaking out of my hat now? I don't know. But
you know, I think that that can be true, but I think there's also the pecking order thing. And I think that there are those men, you know, that have had a bad day with the boss at work and have really gotten it in the outside world, and come home and the thing they do is beat the wife, who beats the kid, who kicks the cat, you know, you can go right down the line. I think sometimes it may not necessarily be that the wife has been the one that's causing it, as much as you're just going down the pecking order, and he's had it from somebody who's been coming down on him pretty hard, and he has, you know, comes home and the next one can see he's getting it.
Something that hasn't been said here tonight either is our cultural notion that a second class status of a woman. I mean, women are not equal with men culturally. And so that she really doesn't have the same rights as a man. And so a man can be rough. I think it's an unconscious thing. I know that in Roman Catholic canon law in 1918 was put in, and I forget what the first part of it is, but anyway, the notion of the church is supposed to be particularly concerned for children, women, and mental defectives. Mm-hmm. In that order. And I think that that's an unconscious bias that, you know, that's in us, that, you know, we're not even aware is causing us this amount of suffering.
I really think that it's simpler than that. It's just the fact that if the guy were living with somebody that was his own size, he wouldn't come home and beat at him. It's just the fact that usually the wife is smaller. And I don't think it's the fact that it's culturally accepted to come home and beat your wife in those situations really is the reason. It's just the fact. It's just the simple fact that he's frustrated and comes home, and the wife is there and available and smaller than he is. And I don't think too many, you know, it just doesn't seem to me that there are a lot of men that would say that it's culturally okay, you know, that even feel justified in beating their wife. It's just the fact that, you know, they're smaller.
I guess the cultural part of it, I'm really convinced it's true, is more of what subconscious sense that we don't even recognize. Yeah, you don't say God's okay to do it consciously, but through the little rhymes that we have, through the jokes that we tell, the cartoons that we have in the newspapers and stuff, there's a mindset that gets ingrained in us somewhere that says it's okay.
And then it's for people, the woman, to take it. I mean, she wants to. That's what's supposed to be done.
I mean, we laugh at those cute little things, and we really consciously think that's not right. But, you know, there's something. The words that's wrong have an impact on us.
Don't think a man would come home and beat up on a wife that could beat up on him.
I mean, not too many parents marry someone who does. Most parents also quit beating their children.
The wife is beaten not because he particularly wants to meet women, except that they're smaller than him. He's looking for somebody smaller than him.
Yeah, and I think you see that most parents quit beating their children. I mean, if you beat your children at all, you quit that when your children get the same size as you are. I mean, you could even stop.
Would be usually done in a sense of security position.
Mary and I've done ads for the next sports event of women weightlifters, and you'd say yes ma'am to the one that they showed on TV.
Yes.
Yes.